Tasmania Talks with Mike O'Loughlin, weekday mornings from 9.
Very good morning to Ruth Forrest, independent MLC from Murchison. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Now, you've got a lot on your plate coming up, haven't you, this week in the Upper House? Good heavens.
Well, it's actually good to be back, Mike. We've had the delay again with the prorogation of Parliament or where everything just stopped. So we've been back last week doing committee work once Parliament was re-established, which has been good to get that back underway again. And this week we sit and deal with some legislation that's before our house.
Yeah, have you got family violence laws? Touch on that first, if you wish.
Yeah, I do commend the government for their ongoing focus on this very serious matter of family violence, and particularly in circumstances where it's perhaps not as obvious to some that it might be occurring, where abuse such as coercive control, which is where one partner controls the behaviour of another by some through surveillance, sometimes through financial abuse, which means, you know, usually the female is the victim here, the woman, not having access to money, emotional abuse, put downs, gaslighting, which is a term we use to make people feel like they are perhaps going a bit mad themselves and that they can't believe their own thoughts and that sort of thing. They're quite insidious and very harmful forms of abuse, and a little bit more difficult to see because there's not a black eye or something like that we can see from verbal, from physical abuse, and also sexual abuse that can happen in relationships too, where consent is not respected. So these are really important aspects of family violence, and the government earlier this year, I think it was earlier this year, we dealt with some legislation around non-fatal strangulation to make that a standalone offence, because that's clearly a very, what we would call a red flag for homicide or murder of the other person.
Gosh, yes.
And so the government did move on that. This latest piece of legislation actually creates an offence for repeat family violence offenders, which is where... And evidence clearly shows that if a person is a perpetrator in a family violence sense, and that relationship ends, they're likely to be a perpetrator in subsequent relationships, or to repeat the offence over a long period of time. So it does actually enable the history to be looked at rather than just the isolated incident, perhaps. So that's an important aspect. And the other thing the courts will be able to do is to mandate perpetrator education or training, like rehabilitation programs, to hopefully address the problem with the perpetrator has, rather than just trying to protect the victim, which we need to do. But we really need to change behaviours, and until we can change the behaviour of perpetrators, it's just going to be an ongoing cycle, if you like. So I do commend the government for bringing those measures forward, particularly to enable the court to be able to mandate a program. Even without necessarily having to wait for a conviction, they can get in earlier and do that to try and help the perpetrator to stop offending.
Well, you've got a lot on it. You've also got changes to paramedic employment opportunities.
Yeah, well, this is something that was raised publicly in our Rural Health Inquiry, the fact that the way paramedics are defined in our legislation currently is under the Ambulance Services Act and regulations. And that's effectively meant that paramedics, who are a profession trained to care for people in the community, can only work in Ambulance Tasmania, where they've actually got skills that could be really well utilised in other settings, like in even GP surgeries, in our emergency departments and other places like that. And we need to ensure, as we know, Mike, at the moment, with the huge pressures on our workforce,
Absolutely.
Our health workforce,
yeah,
that we should be able to ensure that all those with the skills that we need to deliver healthcare can work across the full scope. And sometimes we know that ambulance officers or paramedics do often suffer from PTSD from some of the work they have to do. You know, they are the front line. They see some of the most horrific injuries and things like that. And sometimes they might need to step away from that frontline service. So having the opportunity to work in other settings is really important. So there's a range of other minor and other amendments in that same piece of legislation, but I understand this is the intent of it. I will be clarifying that with the leader during the debate on Wednesday or Thursday this week to make sure that it will be the result that paramedics, particularly those who don't want to wish to work in Ambulance Tasmania but still want to utilise their qualifications and skills, can do it in other parts of our health service.
Yeah, we need them. And also, you've got the protest laws. You've got a big week ahead.
Yeah, this is a so-called protest laws. Like, it's actually the police offences, an amendment bill, and it's called workplace protection. So this has been quite a contentious piece of legislation, and the government have had, the current government have had a number of attempts to legislate stronger penalties around actions where people actually prevent work people getting to work. The law, as they, or the legislation as they brought in, was much broader than that. It would carries a very real risk of capturing a lot of other people who are just wanting to protest, not prevent people going to work, but to protest about matters that are really important to them. And we've seen, you know, we know that people want that right. I actually support that right. I want to do it myself sometimes. I know I've got some of the best protesters around up in the Stanley region and the Bob Brown Foundation in their work in the Tarkine. They've raised some really important issues in this. But it's the way that the protest occurs that's the issue. If they're actually potentially harming workers getting to their workplace, that's not okay in my view. There needs to be a balance in this.
Can't agree more. And also coming into their office place. I mean, where they're in their place of work and coming in. I mean, there's a lot of people in there that are just innocently doing their job.
Well, that's right. And also, like when they, and we've known this to occur in sawmills or other manufacturing places where protesters will invade the workplace and even lock onto machinery act in a way that puts them at risk because of the machinery can be quite large and dangerous if you don't know how to operate it. And so those sort of actions would, in my view, should attract a higher penalty where they are actually putting the workers at risk, either physically or mentally at risk. I mean, imagine if someone did injure themselves really seriously or even was killed in an accident in a workplace, how the workers who worked there would feel. I mean, it'd be a dreadful thing to live with if you're when it occurred. So we do need to have a balance in all of this. I absolutely support the right to protest and to ensure that people can express their views in that way. It's just when we step over into that workplace invasion where it puts others at risk that I think we need to have a greater deterrent. And it should be limited to that, not broad.
And also, you're probably having a chat to fellow pollies in regard to it's not gone away, has it, the Scott Morrison portfolio grab. But if we go back to the origins of that, I reckon it goes back to the Scott Morrison, December 2019, when he was in desperately need of a break. I mean, he took his family to Hawaii, as we remember. Bushfires were raging as he left. Soon after he arrived, they got a lot worse. So he returned to Australia to an avalanche of criticism for taking a holiday when bushfires were threatening towns. But I don't think any of us fully realised the impact of this incident. When January 2020 dawned, we had a Prime Minister who had been working at a furious pace for 14 months and had not taken a holiday at all. I mean, and that's probably, thankfully, Anthony Albanese, he's not making the same mistake.
Well, yes. I mean, one would argue that times are different too, and there's always different pressures at different times. But I think there is a number of questions that do need to be answered around this, I think. And it comes back to the whole matter of trust, I think. Like, we know there's plenty of research around, and I think you only have to talk to people on your show, Mike, to understand trust in politicians is pretty low. And when you do something like this, or particularly the leader of our country does something like this, take on a whole range of portfolios, really significant and very important portfolios with quite significant powers that exist for those ministers, and he doesn't even tell his own ministers or the people of Australia that he's doing it, that's where the problem is. Now, there is a process to replace a minister. Say if a minister was tragically killed in a car crash or something like that, you would immediately initiate a process to fill that position with either an acting minister or then the Governor-General would swear in another minister once the decision was made as to who it was.
But then it would be gazetted.
And that's right. And we've seen that happen, not a death of a minister, thankfully, but a resignation of a minister here in Tasmania, where that position is filled very quickly. It takes, a day or two for the Premier of the day to organise, reshuffle the cabinet. Sometimes it's only fairly minor change. And there's a process around that, so it can be dealt with quite promptly. It does concern me greatly that when the Prime Minister himself said that he was concerned that some of his ministers may not act in the national interest, and that's why he took the powers at that what he calls a critical time, though they were over a period of time, and I don't think it was critical all the time. That is a very sad situation to be in, that you would think that you had ministers in the cabinet, whether it, federally in this case, who you didn't think would act in the national interest. If that's the case, you would ask, why are they even in the cabinet? And our democratic system and our system of government is that there's collective responsibility around decision making. And yes, there are ministerial powers that can be exercised, but there's still that there should be that check and balance. But if you could have one minister making a decision, the Prime Minister acting as that minister, coming in and going over the top, it leaves a very tricky situation, even though he didn't use it except in that one case, but that's still now before the court, so clearly it's an issue.
Oh, gosh, absolutely. But do you believe that they should be reviewing the Biosecurity Act, which it all goes back to, which gives the Health Minister unilateral powers to override all Australian laws? As Scott Morrison said, his secret ministerial appointments during the COVID-19 pandemic were, in his words, necessary. I mean, what about review the entire act, the Biosecurity Act?
Yeah, well, I think it is always a timely reminder. We've had something pretty major like we've had with COVID. As we found with our Public Accounts Committee inquiry into the state's COVID response, that both the Public Health Act and the Emergency Management Act should be reviewed, because there may be issues like this that do need clarifying and tightening up. These laws that we've had, and again, at the federal level, haven't really been tested against, a massive pandemic that we've had. And often with most laws, it is, you don't actually see where some of the flaws might be or where some of the things may need to change until it's put to the test. Now, clearly, the COVID-19 pandemic put all our laws in regard to this to the test, and the Public Accounts Committee recommend a review of our state legislation. The government have committed to doing that. So they are, I understand, the process of doing that. That's a matter for the federal government to pursue, and I certainly hope they do, because you need to be sure that powers are there that may need to protect Australia's national interests, but they're not an overreach.
Tell me, and we'd all agree, Ruth, I'm speaking with Ruth Forrest, by the way, independent MLC for Murchison. Ruth, the cost of living, and look, I've had the fire is on, I've spoken to teachers, I've spoken to nurses, health workers, paramedics. Everybody needs a wage rise. We do need it, because we're basically 3.5% behind before we start. So the cost of living and need for real wages growth, high on the agenda.
Yeah, I think it should be high on the agenda for the state and federal governments.
Absolutely.
It's a national issue, and we've seen what was often referred to as wages stagnation, which wages haven't moved for a long time. In fact, now that inflation is going up and prices are going up along with that, we're seeing that the wages are falling even further behind. So you end up with people who, more and more people finding it really hard to make ends meet. It's not reasonable to expect people to continue to work without that concurrent, if you like, increase in the wages, real wage growth, not just a little bit that doesn't keep up with the cost of living. So I think there is a really real need for taking this seriously. I think the argument about that being inflationary won't hold true, because we've seen normally people expect inflation to go up and the employment issue to be also rising, but we've still got low unemployment. So we need to make sure that we can get the workers we need in the places we do, and we know how much we need them around health services at the moment, for example, and teaching. And we know that there are other states out there who are willing to perhaps provide financial incentives to take some of our teachers and health professionals away. We can't afford that to happen, Mike. We need them here.
Yeah, we've seen the ads, haven't we, Victoria in particular. Mm. I know industry peak bodies and businesses right across the food supply chain estimate 172,000 jobs need to be filled nationwide to ease product shortages and prevent further price rises. That is just gobsmacking. I mean, if you look at this is without touching on health and education. Look at hospitality. Yeah. They're saying nationwide 100,000 for hospitality. Independent supermarkets need 20,000 workers. Convenience stores 15,000. Meat processing 12,000. Wild seafood catch, aquaculture and processing plants 10,000. 10,000 for horticulture and warehouse packers and truck drivers 5,000 up to 172,000. That's why they're saying, look, let the foreign workforce come in. We do need to get the foreign workforce here soon.
Yeah, it's both, isn't it, Mike? It's ensuring that Australians and Tasmanians have an opportunity to work at wages that are commensurate with the work they do. And we know that some of our Pacific nations have always provided a reliable workforce for many of our industries. And in doing that, we actually support the economy of those nations who, a lot of them struggle financially and a lot of their people are quite poor. And so I think it has the added benefit of supporting those families and those people that live in our Pacific Islands, which are our neighbours, as well as helping us to meet the workforce needs that we do. So it's about finding a balance. It's not about replacing Tasmanians' jobs or taking the jobs. We haven't got enough people to do the jobs here at the moment, and so we do need to take a broader view.
We do. I mean, if you look at cost of living, you've got oil prices are now trading well under $100 US a barrel, well under, and petrol now selling for less than $2, thankfully, a litre, one of the biggest drivers of inflation. And household budget stress, of course, is fuel just kicks off the whole, starts it all, but it started to come off the boil. Should we be pushing to get this excise, this 22 cents or 21 cents, continued for another 6 months, perhaps after the 28th of September, when of course we suddenly hit with another 22 cents or whatever it is for per litre for fuel?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Mike. And I think that petrol or fuel is an expensive part of our daily living costs, particularly in Tasmania, where a lot of people live outside of city centres and rely on their cars. I think the government have made it, well, the previous federal government and now this and the Labor government, when they were in opposition, made it clear they weren't going to extend it. I think we need to look at, if that's to be the case, and I believe they will stick to that, I think there needs to be other approaches given to support those who are struggling with cost of living pressures. The price of fuel may well come back down again over time. Like, there are lots of external factors that are feeding into that price. I think we need to look at how we can better support our own people and leave. Probably, you know, I don't think there's a strong argument to continue that. If we can provide the support in other ways.
Can I just say too, when I read your opinion piece in the paper, and it's probably the best opinion piece I've read in just quite a long time, questions relating to electricity are never far away, you say in this article. Mm. Why are we still in the national electricity market? Why are prices rising so fast? We know who's paying, but who's benefiting? Why did Hydro abandon Basslink? Why are we building another cable? Who will pay and who will benefit? And the part that I think is so true is the fact that both state and government and Labor opposition are just tossing a few barbs, this is your quote, tossing a few barbs at each other without explaining the logic of their own positions.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like just a really good punching bag in many respects between the two parties, rather than getting some clear answers and some real air around what we're actually looking at here. And, I mean, I've had a more recent meeting with the CEO of TasNetworks to discuss Mariner's Link and details around that, but there are still not the answers we need, Mike. This is the problem.
Yep.
And I still am not feeling convinced in any way that the benefit will be to Tasmania, that where the money is going to come from, how the costs will be apportioned, and whilst there's some broad expectation that it will reduce power prices overall, if Tasmania is going to be the beneficiary of this. We need to see how that how those numbers are going to work. And as yet, there isn't any detail around that.
None at all. Trying to get people to tell us that we're getting cheaper power prices is ridiculous. It just that nobody actually says, oh, it's going to drop down to such and such. No.
Yeah. I mean, the cost alone of actually building it, if it's to be built, and also not just the Mariners Link itself, but all the other infrastructure that would be needed to enable the transmission of additional energy from various renewable energy areas on both sides of Bass Strait is significant, and that doesn't come without cost either. The other important thing, I think, Mike, and I really I'm going to be asking the Minister further about this, is when and how are we going to actually develop renewable energy zones so that everyone in Tasmania knows, with good consultation, not just, oh, we think this looks like a good area, let's just not worry about what the people there think, where the renewable energy zone should be around Tasmania. I understand it's got a Tasmania as a whole has a fantastic wind resource, and we should capitalise on that. But that doesn't mean you should build wind turbines just anywhere.
Exactly.
Okay? There needs to be a really clear strategy around this. It needs to have really deep and meaningful community consultation, and we need to see it soon.
Also, you discussed quite well, I think, even for me, you explained well about Basslink and how, how Basslink, obviously a necessary part of Tasmania's infrastructure. But the government, the argy-bargy between state government, of course, and the opposition is quite incredible, even in your article. But it's quite, I didn't realise that half the cost of a regulated Basslink, if that's the case, will be paid by TasNetworks, who will then obviously pass it on to Tasmanian consumers. So bills, and there's no way known we're going to be getting pay less for our power.
Yeah, the difference between Basslink and Mariners would be that Basslink was a so-called merchant link, whereas Mariners would be a regulated link. So the transmission costs and that sort of thing would be set by the regulator. Now, with the collapse, if you like, of the arrangement between Hydro and Basslink, and Basslink now being in receivership, if that was to be bought, or probably when it's bought by a party, the question is, will that remain a merchant link or will it become a regulated link? And that's a question I don't know the answer to either. But they are different pricing structures. But regardless, Mike, as I understand it, the fees associated with the Basslink that don't relate to Basslink itself, but relate to the deal that was done around hedging of costs with Macquarie Bank, will continue for many, many years, regardless of which are millions of dollars a year, regardless of what happens with Basslink. So we're still paying for it, even though we might not be using it.
It does seem quite bizarre. But then again, there's probably more examples we can give of what we're paying for. I certainly hope that the jobs summit they're going to do federally will assist with a lot of things. And I hope that, I wish the Liberals would get to the table as well, rather than spit the dummy and say, I'm not going there. Mm. But everybody needs to be there and put their bit in. Even if it gets a bit heated, it all needs to be discussed with everybody present.
Yeah, well, I think if you can have everyone in the room, like, you've got much better chance of an agreement at the end where everyone has some ownership of it, and that will, in my view, inevitably make it more likely to succeed.
Yeah. Ruth, it's always a pleasure. It's great to talk to you again. I look forward to our next chat.
Thanks, Mike. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Indeed. Ruth Forrest is the independent MLC for Murchison with Tasmania Talks.
Tasmania Talks with Mike O'Loughlin, weekday mornings from 9.